Morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 41 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Tuesday, March 25th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The Sitka Assembly will once again discuss a controversial anti-smoking law at its regular meeting tonight. The Assembly has discussed amending the law at three previous meetings without taking a final vote. The proposed amendment would tighten an existing ordinance, which was passed by voters in 2005, and prohibits children from entering businesses that allow smoking. New language, sponsored by Mayor Mim McConnell and Member Phyllis Hackett, would make it clear that children cannot enter those businesses even for special events where smoking is temporarily not allowed. The Assembly voted to pass the amendment on first reading in early January, but it required a second reading to become law. After members of the American Legion spoke against the proposal, it was referred to the Commission on Health Needs and Human Services. In February, the Commission unanimously recommended that the amendment be passed. But two Assembly members were not present, and the issue was postponed until all seven members could vote. Tonight's meeting will begin at 6 p.m., and Raven Radio will provide live coverage at that time. The Assembly will also hear an update from the firm conducting an audit of the city's 2013 finances. That discussion will take place during a work session before the regular meeting at 5 p.m. After a productive second opening on Sunday afternoon, the Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fleet is well over halfway toward its harvest goal. Fishermen landed an estimated 5,000 tons in Sunday's opening, which began at 1:30 p.m. and lasted an hour and 40 minutes, closing at 3:10 p.m. Sunday's catch was just 300 tons less than the harvest in last Thursday's season opener and a little more than the Department of Fish and Game was aiming for. There was no fishing on Monday, and ADF&G biologist Dave Gordon says there will be no fishing today and possibly none tomorrow as processors scramble to stay on top of the catch. Fish that aren't processed in Sitka are tendered elsewhere, to Ketchikan and Petersburg, for instance, an added expense that cuts into the final price paid to fishermen. This year's price remains unclear, but is thought to be low due to an oversupply in Asia, the primary market for sacro. Some of the 48 permit holders emerging from a closed meeting last week expressed concern over the amount of uncertainty in the price for this year's fishery. Sunday's second opener now brings the total catch this year to 10,300 tons, with only 6,000 tons left to go to the harvest limit. So far, Gordon said he has seen no active spawning in his daily aerial surveys. Last year, and even more so in 2012, large areas of spawn began to develop just as the commercial fishery was getting started. As a result, the fleet undershot its harvest goal significantly both years. March 27th marks the 50th anniversary of Alaska's Good Friday earthquake, the largest recorded in North America. Many Sitkans have stories from the epicenter. This is the second story in a four-part series that will air through the 27th. Dennis Gerardo was a Sitka resident for 20 years. He currently resides in Juneau. While Sitka is likely the place where he made the most memories, he says his earliest memory was set in Anchorage. That was 50 years ago, but Gerardo remembers the details vividly, including his brother's birthday cake. KCAW's Emily Foreman has the story.
Actually, my earliest childhood memory, I was only 5 years old, is sitting in the door frame between the living room and the hallway of our second story apartment on Elmendorf Air Force Base. We kind of looked out the picture window of the living room, and the building was swaying so much that we would see the ground and then the building would sway back and we'd see the sky. All heck broke loose at that point. Things were flying all over the living room, including a cage with our pet parakeet. I think we buried it in the yard there at the apartment complex. Those memories of being in the 64 earthquake are with me forever and pretty vivid even to this day, 50 years later. My mother was in the kitchen preparing a pot of chili and this beautiful cake, birthday cake for my brother in the shape of a guitar. He was a Beatle wannabe at that time. I remember hearing her scream and the chili just went all over the kitchen and all over the cake. Door fell open to the closet and my brother's birthday presents fell out of the closet, so he got to see what he was going to get. Again, I don't remember being scared. I just remember being like, wow, this is maybe even cool. This is cool. My mother, she actually tried to get out of the apartment, and she went out into the hallway but didn't get very far. She sort of sat down there and protected herself. Since that time, it's kind of a funny thing. I've thought often about why did my mother try to get out of the apartment? Why didn't she come back and be with her family? And I've wondered. I never ask her about that. I've always wanted to. She's passed away now, but I've always wanted to. After her passing, I wanted to ask her, why didn't you stay with us? Why did you try to get out and or not take us with you? She was just trying to save herself, I guess. I don't know. But the next two nights, we actually slept in our car. My dad had this Mercury something. It was a blue thing with big fins on the back. The aftershocks were so constant and so strong, they didn't know if the building would hold up. You know, it did alter our future a little bit. My dad had every intention of sort of staying in Alaska, probably even retiring there from the military. My mother would have nothing to do with that after the earthquake. She says, we're getting out of here. What's funny about this is I remember the earthquake and points in time soon after, like playing outside amongst the cracks in the ground. After that, everything sort of fades away again for several years until I start having memories again.
That was a story from KCAW's Emily Foreman. It's the second in a four-part series commemorating the 1964 Great Alaska Earthquake. We'll have a different story every day through the anniversary on March 27th. Alaska Marine Highway officials want your comments on next fall and winter's ferry sailings. A draft schedule for October of 2014 through April of 2015 is now available online. A teleconferenced public hearing will be on April 8th. The schedule lists some changes, many due to off-season layups and repairs. For example, the small southeast ferry Leconte will get a new bow thruster next winter. It's been breaking down and delaying sailings. General Manager John Falvey says the thruster controls the side-to-side movement of the forward hull.
It's old. It's 20, 25 years old. And this next federal project this winter, we're going to completely replace that bow thruster, and we hope that those problems will come to an end.
The Aurora, the Leconte's sister ship, will sail in its place. It's usually in Prince William Sound. The Kennecott and the Chenega will also be in for repairs next winter. All 11 Marine Highway vessels will also undergo overhauls. We have a link to the schedule and teleconference information posted on our website. While changes may be made, the schedule will only be posted online. Falvey says the printed brochures used for decades were expensive and sometimes wrong.
Our system is so complex. That book, in many cases, a brochure would be outdated before it was printed, you know, because of changes, because this changes, that changes. So the information you get online is up to the minute.
The April 8th scheduled teleconference will take Southeast testimony starting at 10 a.m. Comments from those in South Central and Southwest will follow at 1 p.m. More details are posted on our website with this report. In Wrangell, the school board and hiring committee have announced that Jay Thomas will replace Rich Rhodes as superintendent of schools. It's the latest in a series of superintendent hires across Southeast. Thomas will join a slate of brand new district heads that includes Mary Wegner, the new superintendent of Sitka Schools, and Troy Thane, the new superintendent from Mount Edgecombe High School. Shady Grove Oliver has more from Wrangell.
Jay Thomas comes to Wrangell from Unalakleet. He currently works as the assistant superintendent of the Bering Strait School District. He's also worked as a principal and teacher in the same district. Before that, he taught in Akatan in the Aleutians and in St. Mary's School District in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region of Western Alaska. Outside of Alaska, he's worked as a teacher in Union, Oregon. He earned his undergraduate degree from Eastern Oregon University and has a Master's of Educational Leadership from the University of Alaska Anchorage. He will take over from Rich Rhodes as superintendent of Wrangell Schools at the start of the 2014-2015 school year. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
And two Southeast Alaska mines could get close to $300 million in state support under a bill moving through the legislature. Senate Bill 99 authorizes the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to issue bonds for the projects. It moved out of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee last week and awaits scheduling on the chamber's floor. One mine is the Niblack Gold, Silver, Copper, and Zinc Prospect. The other is the Bokan-Dotson Ridge Rare Earth Element Mine. Both are on Prince of Wales Island, southwest of Ketchikan. Ken Collison is Chief Operating Officer for Ucore Rare Metals, Bokan's developer. At an earlier hearing, he told the committee, rare earth metals are needed for strong batteries and high-tech devices.
For things like electric cars, hybrid cars, it's critical because much smaller components, much lighter components. Same thing with the military tech. It goes into aviation engines, all that kind of thing.
The metals are in short supply, and federal officials are encouraging mine development. The bill authorizes the authority to raise up to $145 million for Bokan through bonds. Another $125 million could go toward the Niblack mine and its ore processing facility near Ketchikan. Collison said mines need state support.
The financial markets are such right now for the mining industry, it's very tough. And this is going to show huge support from the state of Alaska. It's going to make the financial markets and the rest of the mining community realize that the state is open for business. And this would be a big help for us in helping develop this project.
Critics say the shortage of private financing means the mines are not viable projects. The funds were added to a larger bill, making changes to an energy fund that's also managed by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Anchorage Senator Liesl McGuire sponsored the measure. She supported amendments drafted by Sitka Senator Bert Stedman, adding the Southeast Mines. The bill must pass the full Senate, as well as the House, before it's sent to the governor. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. To read comments on our stories on Facebook, click on the Facebook link. No login or registration is required. And to have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer, click on the Twitter link. We're going to rejoin NPR's Morning Edition. Good morning.